This is Audible.
Penguin Audio presents Iron Kissed by Patricia Briggs. Read by Lorelei King. Chapter 1. A cowboy, a lawyer, and a mechanic watched Queen of the Damned, I murmured. Warren, who had once a long time ago been a cowboy, snickered and wiggled his bare feet.
It could be the beginning of either a bad joke or a horror story.
No, said Kyle, the lawyer, whose head was propped up on my thigh. If you want a horror story, you have to start out with a werewolf, his gorgeous lover, and a walker. Warren, the werewolf, laughed and shook his head.
Too confusing. Not many people still remember what a walker is.
Mostly they just confused us with skinwalkers. Since walkers and skinwalkers are both Native American shapeshifters, I can sort of understand it. Especially since I'm pretty sure the walker label came from some dumb white person who couldn't tell the difference. But I'm not a skinwalker. First of all, I'm from the wrong tribe. My father had been Blackfoot from a northern Montana tribe, and skinwalkers come from the southwestern tribes, mostly Hopi or Navajo. Second, skinwalkers have to wear the skin of the animal they change into, usually a coyote or wolf, but they cannot change their eyes. They are evil mages who bring disease and death wherever they go. When I change into a coyote, I don't need a skin. Or, I glanced down at Warren, once a cowboy and now a werewolf, the moon. When I am a coyote, I look just like every other coyote, pretty much harmless, really. As far down the power scale of the magical critters that lived in the state of Washington as it was possible to get. Which is one of the things that used to help keep me safe. I just wasn't worth bothering about. That had been changing over the past year. Not that I'd grown any more powerful, but I'd started doing things that drew attention. When the vampires figured out that I'd killed not one, but two of their own. As if called by my thoughts, a vampire walked across the screen of the TV. A TV so big it wouldn't have fit in my trailer's living room. He was shirtless, and his pants clung inches below his sexy hip bones. I resented the shiver of fear that surged through my body instead of lust. Funny how killing them had only made the vampires more frightening. I dreamed of vampires crawling out of holes in the floor and whispering to me from the shadows. I dreamed of the feel of a stake sliding through flesh and fangs digging into my arm. If it had been Warren with his head on my lap instead of Kyle, he would have noticed my reaction. But Warren was stretched out on the floor and firmly focused on the screen. You know, I snuggled deeper into the obscenely comfortable leather couch in the upstairs TV room of Kyle's huge house and tried to sound casual. I wondered why Kyle picked this movie. Somehow I didn't think there would be quite so many bare manly chests in a movie called Queen of the Damned. Warren snickered, ate a handful of popcorn from the bowl on his flat stomach, then said with more than a hint of a Texas drawl in his rough voice,
You expected more naked women and fewer half-clothed men, did you, Mercy? You ought to know Kyle better than that.
He laughed quietly again and pointed at the screen.
Hey, I didn't think vampires were immune to gravity. Have you ever seen one dangle from the ceiling?
I shook my head and watched as a vampire dropped on top of two of his groupie victims. I wouldn't put it past them, though. I haven't seen them eat people yet, either. Ick.
Shut up. I like this movie.
Kyle, the lawyer, defended his choice.
Lots of pretty boys writhing in sheets and running around with low-cut pants and no shirts. I thought you might enjoy it too, Mercy.
I looked down at him, every lovely, solar-flexed inch of him, and thought that he was more interesting than any of the pretty men on the screen. More real. In appearance, he was almost a stereotype of a gay man, from the hair gel in his weakly cut dark brown hair to the tastefully expensive clothes he wore. If people weren't careful, they missed the sharp intelligence that hid beneath the pretty exterior, which was, because it was Kyle, the point of the facade.
This really isn't bad enough for bad movie night, Kyle continued, not worried about interrupting the movie. None of us were watching it for its scintillating dialogue. I'd have gotten Blade 3, but oddly enough, it was already checked out.
Any movie with Wesley Snipes is worth watching, even if you have to turn off the sound.
I twisted and bent so I could snitch a handful of popcorn from Warren's bowl. He was too thin still. That and a limp were reminders that only a month ago he'd been so badly hurt, I thought he would die. Werewolves are tough, bless him, or we'd have lost him to a demon-bearing vampire. That one had been the first vampire I'd killed, with the full knowledge and permission of the local vampire mistress. That she hadn't actually intended me to kill him didn't negate that I'd done it with her blessing. She couldn't do anything to me for his death, and she didn't know I was responsible for the other.
"As long as he's not dressed in drag," drawled Warren.
Kyle snorted agreement. "Wesley Snipes may be a beautiful man, but he makes a butt-ugly woman."
"Hey," I objected, pulling my mind back to the conversation. "To Wong Fu was a good movie."
We'd watched it last week at my house. A faint buzzing noise drifted up the stairs, and Kyle rolled off the couch and onto his feet in a graceful, dance-like move that was wasted on Warren. He was still focused on the movie, though his grin probably wasn't the reaction the movie makers had intended for their bloodfest scene. My feelings were much more in line with the desired result. It was all too easy to imagine myself as the victim.
"Brownies are done, my sweets," said Kyle. "Anyone want something more to drink?"
"No, thank you." It was just make-believe, I thought, watching the vampire feed.
"Warren?"
His name finally drew Warren's gaze off the TV screen.
"Water would be nice."
Warren wasn't as pretty as Kyle, but he had the rugged man look down pat. He watched Kyle walk down the stairs with hungry eyes. I smiled to myself. It was good to see Warren happy at last. But the eyes he turned to me as soon as Kyle was out of sight were serious. He used the remote to raise the volume, then sat up and faced me, knowing Kyle wouldn't hear us over the movie.
"You need to choose," he told me intently. "Adam or Samuel or neither. But you can't keep them dangling."
Adam was the alpha of the local werewolf pack, my neighbor, and sometimes my date. Samuel was my first love, my first heartbreak, and currently my roommate. Just my roommate, though he'd like to be more. I didn't trust either of them. Samuel's easygoing exterior masked a patient and ruthless predator. And Adam, well, Adam just flat scared me. And I was very much afraid that I loved them both.
"I know."
Warren dropped his eyes from mine, a sure sign he was uncomfortable.
"I didn't brush my teeth with gunpowder this morning so I could go shooting my mouth off, Mercy. But this is serious. I know it's been difficult, but you can't have two dominant werewolves after the same woman without bloodshed. I don't know any other wolves who could have allowed you as much leeway as they have, but one of them is going to break soon."
My cell phone began playing the baby elephant walk. I dug it out of my hip pocket and looked at the caller ID. "I believe you," I told Warren. "I just don't know what to do about any of it." There was more wrong with Samuel than undying love of me. But that was between him and me, and none of Warren's business. And Adam, for the first time, I wondered if it wouldn't just be easier if I pulled up stakes and moved. The phone continued to sing. "It's Z," I said. "I have to take this." Z was my former boss and mentor. He taught me how to rebuild an engine from the ground up, and he'd given me the means to kill the vampires responsible for Warren's limp and the nightmares that were leaving fine lines around his eyes. I figured that gave Z the right to interrupt Friday night at the movies.
"Just think about it."
I gave him a faint smile and flipped open my phone. "Hey, Z." There was a pause on the other end.
"Mercedes," he said,
and not even his thick German accent could disguise the hesitant tone of his voice. Something was wrong.
"What do you need?" I asked, sitting up straighter and putting my feet on the floor.
"Warren's here," I added, so Z would know we had an audience. Werewolves make having a private conversation difficult.
"Would you drive out to the reservation with me?"
He could have been speaking of the Umatilla Reservation, which was a short drive from the Tri-Cities.
but it was Z, so he was talking about the Ronald Wilson Reagan Fay Reservation just this side of Walla Walla, better known around here as Fairyland. Now? I asked. Besides, I glanced at the vampire on the big screen TV. They hadn't gotten it quite right, hadn't captured the real evil, but it was too close for comfort anyway. Somehow I couldn't work up too much sorrow at missing the rest of the movie, or more conversation about my love life either.
No, Z groused irritably. Next week. Jetzt. Of course now. Where are you? I will pick you up.
Do you know where Kyle's house is? I asked.
Kyle?
Warren's boyfriend. Z knew Warren. I hadn't realized he hadn't met Kyle. We're out in West Richland.
Give me the address. I will find it.
Z's truck purred down the highway, even though it was older than I was. Too bad the upholstery wasn't in as good a shape as the engine. I shifted my rump over a few inches to keep a wayward spring from digging in too deeply. The dashlights illuminated the craggy face that Z presented to the world. His fine white hair was mussed a little, as if he'd been rubbing his hands over it. Warren hadn't said more about Adam or Samuel after I'd hung up, because Kyle, thank goodness, had arrived with brownies. It wasn't that I was bothered by Warren's interference. I'd done enough interfering in his love life that I figured he had a right. I just didn't want to think about it anymore. Z and I rode mostly in silence from West Richland, all the way past Richland and on through Pasco. I knew better than to try to get something out of the old gremlin until he was ready to talk, so I let him alone until he decided to speak, at least after the first 10 or 15 questions he hadn't answered.
"Have you been to the reservation before?"
he asked abruptly as we crossed the river just outside Pasco on the highway to Walla Walla. "No." The Fay Reservation in Nevada welcomed visitors. They had built a casino and small theme park to attract tourists. The Walla Walla Reservation, however, actively discouraged anyone who wasn't Fay from entering. I wasn't quite certain if it was the feds or the Fay themselves responsible for the unfriendly reputation. Z tapped unhappily on his steering wheel with hands that belonged to a man who'd spent his lifetime repairing cars, tough and scarred. With oil so ingrained not even pumice soap would remove it. They were the right hands for the human that Z had pretended to be. When the Grey Lords, the powerful and ruthless beings who ruled the Fae in secret, forced him to admit what he was to the public a few years ago, a decade or more after the first Fae had come out, Z hadn't bothered to change his outward appearance at all. I'd known him for a little over 10 years, and the sour old man face was the only one I'd ever seen. He had another, I knew that. Most Fae lived among humans under their glamour, even if they admitted what they were. People are just not ready to deal with the Fae's true appearance. Sure, some of them looked human enough, but they also don't age. The thinning hair and the wrinkled, age-spotted skin were sure signs that Z wasn't wearing his true face. His sour expression, though, was no disguise.
"Don't eat or drink anything," he said abruptly.
"I've read all the fairy tales," I reminded him. "No food, no drink, no favors, no thanking anyone." He grunted.
"Fairy tales. Damn children's stories."
"I've read Catherine Briggs, too," I offered, "and the original Grimms." Mostly looking for some mention of a fae who could have been Z. He wouldn't talk about it, though I think he'd been someone. So finding out who he'd been had become something of a hobby of mine.
"Better. Better, but not much."
He tapped his fingers on the wheel.
"Briggs was an archivist. Her books are only as correct as her sources, and mostly they are dangerously incomplete. The stories of the brothers Grimm are more concerned with entertainment than reality. Both of them are nur Schatten, only shadows of reality."
He looked at me, a quick, searching glance.
"Uncle Mike suggested you might be useful here. I thought it was better repayment than might otherwise come your way."
To kill the sorcerer vampire, who was gradually being taken over by the demon that made him a sorcerer, Z'd risked the wrath of the Grey Lords to loan me a couple of the treasures of the Fae. I'd killed that vampire all right, and then I'd killed the one who'd made him. As in the stories, if you use a fairy gift once more than you have permission for, there are consequences. If I'd known this was going to be the repayment for favors rendered, I'd have been more apprehensive from the start. The last time I'd had to repay a favor hadn't ended well. "I'll be all right," I told him, despite the cold knot of dread in my stomach. He gave me a sour look.
"I had not thought about what it might mean to bring you into the reservation after dark."
"People do go to the reservation," I said, though I wasn't really sure of it.
"Not people like you, and no visitors after dark."
He shook his head.
"A human comes in and sees what he should, especially by daylight, when the eyes are easier to fool. But you, the Grey Lords have forbidden hunting humans, but we have our share of predators, and it is hard to deny nature. Especially when the Grey Lords who make our rules are not here. There is only I. And if you see what you should not, there are those who will say they are only protecting what they have to."
It was only when he switched into German that I realized that he had been talking to himself for the last half of it. Thanks to Z, my German was better than two requisite years of college classes had left it, but not good enough to follow him when he got going. It was after 8 at night, but the sun still cast her warm gaze on the trees in the foothills beside us. The larger trees were green still, but some of the smaller bushes were giving hints of the glorious colors of fall. Near the Tri-Cities, the only trees were in town, where people kept them watered through the brutal summers or along one of the rivers. But as we drove toward Walla Walla, where the Blue Mountains helped wring a little more moisture out of the air, the countryside got slowly greener.
"The worst of it,"
Z said, finally switching to English.
"I don't think you'll be able to tell us anything we don't already know."
"About what?" He gave me a sheepish look, which sat oddly on his face.
"Yeah, I am mixing this up. Let me start again."
He drew in a breath and let it out with a sigh.
"Within the reservation, we do our own law enforcement. We have that right. We do it quietly, because the human world is not ready for the ways we have to enforce the law. It is not so easy to imprison one of us, eh?"
"The werewolves have the same problem," I told him.
"Yeah, I bet."
He nodded, a quick jerk of a nod.
"So, there have been deaths in the reservation lately. We think it is the same person in each case."
"You're on the reservation police force?" I asked. He shook his head.
"We don't have such a thing. Not as such. But Uncle Mike is on the council. He thought that your accurate nose might be useful and sent me to get you."
Uncle Mike ran a bar in Pasco that served Faye and some of the other magical people who lived in town. That he was powerful, I'd always known. How else could he keep a lid on so many Fae? I hadn't realized he was on the council. Maybe if I'd known there was a council to be on, I might have suspected it. "Can't one of you do as much as I can?" I held up a hand to keep him from answering right away. "It's not that I mind. I can imagine a lot worse ways to pay off my debt. But why me? Didn't Jack's giants smell the blood of an Englishman for Pete's sake? What about magic? Couldn't one of you find a killer with magic?" "I don't know much about magic, but I would think that a reservation of Fae would have someone whose magic would be more useful than my nose."
"Maybe the Grey Lords could make magic to do their bidding to show them the guilty party,"
Z said.
"But we do not want to call their attention. It is too chancy. Outside of the Grey Lords,"
he shrugged,
"the murderer is proving surprisingly elusive. As far as scent goes, most of us aren't gifted in that way. It was a talent largely given only to the beast-minded. Once they determined it would be safer for all of us to blend in with humans rather than live apart, the Grey Lords killed most of the beasts among us that had survived the coming of Christ and Cold Iron. There are maybe one or two here with the ability to sniff people out, but they are so powerless that they cannot be trusted."
"What do you mean?" He gave me a grim look.
"Our ways are not yours. If one has no power to protect himself, he cannot afford to offend anyone. If the murderer is powerful or well-connected, none of the Fae who could scent him would be willing to accuse him.
He smiled, a sour little quirk of his lips.
We may not be able to lie, but truth and honesty are rather different.
I'd been raised by werewolves who could, mostly, smell a lie at 100 yards. I knew all about the difference between truth and honesty. Something about what he said. I'm not powerful. What happens if I say something to offend? He smiled.
You will be here as my guest. It might not keep you safe if you see too much, as our laws are clear on how to deal with mortals who stray underhill and see more than they ought. That you are invited by the council, knowing what you are, and that you are not quite human, should provide some immunity. But anyone who is offended when you speak the truth must, by our guesting laws, come after me rather than you. And I can protect myself.
I believed it. Z calls himself a gremlin, which is probably more accurate than not, except that the word gremlin is a lot newer than Z. He is one of the few kinds of Fae with an affinity for iron, which gives him all sorts of advantages over the other Fae. Iron is fatal to most of them. There wasn't any sign that marked the well-maintained county road where we turned off the highway. The road wove through small wooded hills that reminded me more of Montana than the barren cheatgrass and sagebrush-covered land around the Tri-Cities. We turned a corner, drove through a patch of thick-growing poplar, and emerged with twin walls of cinnamon-colored concrete block rising on either side of us, 16 feet tall, with concertina wire along the top, to make guests feel even more welcome. "It looks like a prison," I said. The combination of narrow road and tall walls made me claustrophobic.
"Yes," agreed Z a bit grimly. "I forgot to ask, do you have your driver's license with you?"
"Yes."
"Good. I want you to remember, Mercy. There are a lot of creatures in the reservation who are not fond of humans, and you are close enough to human that they will bear you no goodwill. If you step too far out of bounds, they will have you dead first and leave me to seek justice later."
"I'll mind my tongue," I told him. He snorted with uncomplimentary amusement.
"I'll believe that when I see it. I wish Uncle Mike were here, too. They wouldn't dare bother you then."
"I thought this was Uncle Mike's idea."
"It is, but he is working and cannot leave his tavern tonight."
We must have traveled half a mile when the road finally made an abrupt right turn to reveal a guardhouse and gate. Z stopped his truck and rolled down the window. The guard wore a military uniform with a large BFA patch on his arm. I wasn't familiar enough with the BFA, Bureau of Fae Affairs, to know what branch of the military was associated with them, if any. The guard had that rent-a-cop feel, as if he felt a little out of place in the uniform, even as he relished the power it gave him. The badge on his chest read O'Donnell. He leaned forward, and I got a whiff of garlic and sweat, though he didn't smell unwashed. My nose is just more sensitive than most people's.
"I'd Z," he said.
Despite his Irish name, he looked more Italian or French than Irish. His features were bold, and his hair was receding. Z opened his wallet and handed over his driver's license. The guard made a big deal of scrutinizing the picture and looking at Z. Then he nodded and grunted.
"Hers, too."
I had already grabbed my wallet out of my purse. I handed Z my license to pass over to the guard.
"No designation," O'Donnell said, flicking the corner of my license with his thumb. "She's not Fae, sir,"
said Z in a deferential tone I'd never heard from him before.
"Really? What business does she have here?" "She's my guest," Z said, speaking quickly, as if he knew I was about to tell the moron it was none of his business.
And he was a moron, he and whoever was in charge of security here. Picture IDs for Fae? The only thing all Fae have in common is glamour, the ability to change their appearance. The illusion is so good that it affects not only human senses, but physical reality. That's why a 500-pound, 10-foot-tall ogre can wear a size 6 dress and drive a Miata. It's not shape-shifting, I'm told. But as far as I'm concerned, it's as close as makes no never mind. I don't know what kind of ID I would have had them use, but a picture ID was worthless. Of course, the Fae tried really hard to pretend that they could only take one human form without ever saying exactly that. Maybe they'd convince some bureaucrat to believe it.
"Will you please get out of the truck, ma'am?"
the moron said, stepping out of the guardhouse and crossing in front of the truck until he was on my side of the vehicle. Z nodded. I got out of the car. The guard walked all the way around me, and I had to restrain my growl. I don't like people I don't know walking behind me. He wasn't quite as dumb as he first appeared, because he figured it out and walked around me again.
"Brass doesn't like civilian visitors, especially after dark," he said to Z, who had gotten out to stand next to me.
"I am allowed, sir,"
Z replied, still in that deferential tone. The guard snorted and flipped through a few pages on his clipboard, though I don't think he actually was reading anything.
"Seabold Adelbertsmeiter."
He pronounced it wrong, making Z's name sound like Seabold instead of Z-Bolt.
"Michael McNellis and Owen Jones."
Michael McNellis could be Uncle Mike, or not. I didn't know any Fae named Owen, but I could count the Fae I knew by any name on one hand, with fingers left over. Mostly the Fae kept to themselves.
"That's right,"
Z said with false patience that sounded genuine. I only knew it was false because Z had no patience with fools, or anyone else for that matter.
"I am Seabold,"
he said it the same way O'Donnell had. The petty tyrant kept my license and walked back to his little office. I stayed where I was, so I couldn't see exactly what he did, though I could hear the sound of computer keys being tapped. He came back after a couple of minutes and returned my license to me.
"Stay out of trouble, Mercedes Thompson. Fairyland is no place for good little girls."
Obviously O'Donnell had been sick the day they'd had sensitivity training. I wasn't usually a hardcore stickler, but something about the way he said, "little girl," made it an insult. Mindful of Z's wary gaze, I took my license and slipped it into my pocket and tried to keep what I was thinking to myself. I don't think my expression was bland enough because he shoved his face into mine.
"Did you hear me, girl?"
I could smell the honey, ham, and mustard he'd had on his dinner sandwich, the garlic he'd probably eaten last night. Maybe he'd had a pizza or lasagna. "I heard you," I said in as neutral a tone as I could manage, which wasn't admittedly very good. He fingered the gun on his hip. He looked at Z.
"She can stay 2 hours. If she's not back out by then, we'll come looking for her."
Z bowed his head like combatants do in karate movies, without letting his eyes leave the guard's face. He waited until the guard walked back to his office before he got back in the car, and I followed his lead. The metal gate slid open with a reluctance that mirrored O'Donnell's attitude. The steel it was built of was the first sign of competence I'd seen. Unless there was rebar in the walls, the concrete might keep people like me out, but it would never keep Fae in. The concertina wire was too shiny to be anything but aluminum, and aluminum doesn't bother the Fae in the slightest. Of course, ostensibly, the reservation was set up to restrict where the Fae lived and to protect them, so it shouldn't matter that they could come and go as they pleased, guarded gate or not. Z drove through the gates and into Fairyland. I don't know what I expected of the reservation. Military housing of some sort, maybe, or English cottages. Instead, there were row after row of neat, well-kept ranch houses with attached one-car garages laid out in identical-sized yards with identical fences, chain-link around the front yard, 6-foot cedar around the backyard. The only difference from one house to the next was in color of paint and foliage in the yards. I knew the reservation had been here since the 80s, but it looked as though it might have been built a year ago. There were cars scattered here and there, mostly SUVs and trucks, but I didn't see any people at all. The only sign of life aside from Z and me was a big black dog that watched us with intelligent eyes from the front yard of a pale yellow house. The dog pushed the separate effect up to uber-creepy. I turned to comment about it to Z when I realized that my nose was telling me some odd things. "Where's the water?" I asked.
"What water?"
He raised an eyebrow. "I smell swamp. water and rot and growing things. He gave me a look I couldn't decipher.
That's what I told Uncle Mike. Our glamour works best for sight and touch. Very good for taste and hearing, but not as well for scent. Most people can't smell well enough for scent to be a problem. You smelled that I was fae the first time you met me.
Actually, he was wrong. I've never met two people who smell exactly alike. I thought that earthy scent that he and his son Tad shared was just part of their own individual essences. It wasn't until a long time later that I learned to distinguish between fae and human. Unless you live within an hour's drive of one of the four fae reservations in the U.S., the chances of running into one just weren't that high. Until I'd moved to the Tri-Cities and started working for Z, I'd never knowingly met a fae. "So where is the swamp?" I asked. He shook his head.
"I hope that you will be able to see through whatever means our murderer has used to disguise himself. But for your own sake, Liebling, I would hope that you would leave the reservation its secrets, if you can."
He turned down a street that looked just like the first four we'd passed, except that there was a young girl of about 8 or 9 playing with a yo-yo in one of the yards. She watched the spinning, swinging toy with solemn attention that didn't change when Z parked the car in front of her house. When Z opened the gate, she caught the yo-yo in one hand and looked at us with adult eyes.
"No one has entered," she said.
Z nodded.
"This is the latest murder scene," he told me. "We found it this morning. There are 6 others. The rest have had a lot of people in and out. But except for this one,"
he indicated the girl with the tip of his head,
"who is a council member, and Uncle Mike, there have been no other trespassers since his death."
I looked at the child, who was one of the council, and she gave me a smile and popped her bubblegum. I decided it was safest to ignore her. "You want me to see if I can smell someone who was in all the houses?"
"If you can."
"There's not exactly a database where scents are stored like fingerprints. Even if I scent him out, I'll have no idea who it is, unless it's you, Uncle Mike, or your council member here." I nodded my head toward Yo-Yo Girl. Z smiled without humor.
"If you can find one scent that is in every house, I will personally escort you around the reservation or the entire state of Washington until you find the murdering son of a bitch."
That's when I knew this was personal. Z didn't swear much, and never in English. Bitch, in particular, was a word he'd never used in my presence. "It will be better if I do this alone, then," I told him, "so the scents you're carrying don't contaminate what is already there. Do you mind if I use the truck to change?"
Nine, he said. "Go change."
I returned to the truck and felt the girl's gaze on the back of my neck all the way. She looked too innocent and helpless to be anything but a serious nasty. I got into the truck on the passenger side to get as much room as possible and stripped out of all my clothes. For werewolves, the change is very painful, especially if they wait too long to change at a full moon and the moon pulls the change from them. Shifting doesn't hurt me at all. Actually, it feels good, like a thorough stretch after a workout. I get hungry, though. And if I hop from one form to the other too often, it makes me tired. I closed my eyes and slid from human into my coyote form. I scratched the last tingle out of one ear with my hind paw, then hopped out the window I'd left open. My senses as a human are sharp. When I switch forms, they get a little better. But it's more than that. Being in coyote form focuses the information that my ears and nose are telling me better than I can do as a human. I started casting about on the sidewalk just inside the gate, trying to get a feel for the smells of the house. By the time I made it to the porch, I knew the scent of the male, he certainly wasn't a man, though I couldn't quite pinpoint what he was, who had made this his home. I could also pick out the scents of the people who visited most often, people like the girl, who had returned to her spinning, snapping yo-yo, though she watched me rather than her toy. Except for her very first statement, she and Z hadn't exchanged a word that I had heard. It might have meant they didn't like each other, but their body language wasn't stiff or antagonistic. Perhaps they just didn't have anything to say. Z opened the door when I stopped in front of it, and a wave of death billowed out. I couldn't help but take a step back. Even a Fae, it seemed, was not immune to the indignities of death. There was no need for the caution that made me creep over the threshold into the entryway. But some things, especially in coyote form, are instinctive. Chapter 2. It wasn't hard to follow the scent of blood to the living room where the Fae had been killed. Blood was splattered generously over various pieces of furniture and the carpet, with a larger stain where the body had evidently come to rest at last. His remains had been removed, but no further effort had been made to clean it up. To my inexpert eyes, it didn't look like he'd struggled much, because nothing was broken or overturned. It was more as if someone had enjoyed ripping him apart. It had been a violent death, perfect for creating ghosts. I wasn't sure Z or Uncle Mike knew about the ghosts, though I'd never tried to hide it. For a long time, I hadn't realized that it wasn't something everyone could do. That was how I'd killed the second vampire. Vampires can hide their daytime resting places even from the nose of a werewolf or coyote. Not even good magic users can break their protection spells. But I can find them, because the victims of traumatic deaths tend to linger as ghosts, and vampires have plenty of traumatized victims. That's why there aren't many walkers. I've never met another. The vampires killed them all. If the Fae whose blood painted the floors and walls had left a ghost, though, it had no desire to see me. Not yet. I crouched down in the doorway between the entryway and the living room and closed my eyes, the better to concentrate on what I smelled. The murder victim scent I put aside. Every house, like every person, has a scent. I'd start with that and work out to the scents that didn't belong. I found the base scent of the room, in this case mostly pipe smoke, wood smoke, and wool. The wood smoke was odd. I opened my eyes and looked around just in case, but there was no sign of a fireplace. If the scent had been fainter, I would have assumed someone had come in with it on their clothes, but the scent was prevalent. Maybe he'd found some incense or something that smelled like a fire. Since discovering the mysterious cause of the burnt wood smell was unlikely to be useful, I put my chin back on my front paws and shut my eyes again. Once I knew what the house smelled like, I could better separate the surface scents that would be the living things that came and went. As promised, I found that Uncle Mike had been here. I also found the spicy scent of Yo-Yo Girl, both recent and old. She had been here often. All the scents that were left I absorbed until I felt I could recall them upon command. My memory for scent is somewhat better than for sight. I might forget someone's face, but I seldom forget their scent, or their voice, for that matter. I opened my eyes to head back to search the house further, and everything had changed. The living room had been smallish, tidy, and every bit as bland as the outside of the house. The room I found myself standing in now was nearly twice as big. Instead of drywall, polished oak panels lined the walls, laden with small, intricate tapestries of forest scenes. The victim's blood, which I'd just seen splattered over an oatmeal-colored carpet, coated instead a rag rug and spilled over onto the glossy wood floor. A fireplace of river stone stood against the front wall where a window had looked out over the street. There were no windows on that side of the room now, but there were lots of windows on the other side, and through the glass I could see a forest that had never grown in the dry climate of eastern Washington. It was much, much too large to be contained in the small backyard that had been enclosed in a 6-foot cedar fence. I put my paws on the window ledge and stared out at the woods beyond, and wonder replaced the childish disappointment of discovering the reservation to be a particularly unimaginative suburbia. The coyote wanted to go explore the secrets that we just knew lay within the deep green forest. But we had a job to do. So I pulled my nose away from the glass and hopscotched on the dry places on the floor until I was back out in the hallway, which looked just as it always had. There were 2 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms, and a kitchen. My job was made easier because I was only interested in fresh scents, so the search didn't take me long. When I looked back into the living room on my way out of the house, its windows still looked out to forest rather than backyard. My eyes lingered for a moment on the easy chair, which was positioned to look out at the trees. I could almost see him sitting there, enjoying the wild, as he smoked his pipe in a haze of rich-smelling smoke. But I didn't see him. Not really. He wasn't a ghost, just a figment of my imagination and the scent of pipe smoke and forest. I still didn't know what he'd been, other than powerful. This house would remember him for a long time, but it held no unquiet ghosts. I walked out the open front door and back into the bland little world the humans had built for the Fae to keep them out of their cities. I wondered how many of those opaque cedar fences hid forests or swamps, and I was grateful that my coyote form kept me from being able to ask questions. I doubt I'd have had the willpower to keep my mouth shut otherwise, and I thought the forest was one of those things I wasn't supposed to see. Z opened the truck door for me, and I hopped in so he could drive me to the next place. The girl watched us drive off, still not speaking. I couldn't read the expression on her face. The second house we stopped at was a clone of the first, right down to the color of the trim around the windows. The only difference was that the front yard had a small lilac tree and a flower bed on one side of the sidewalk, one of the few flower beds I had seen since I came in here. The flowers were all dead, and the lawn was yellowed and in desperate need of a lawnmower. There was no guardian at this porch. Z put his hand on the door and paused without opening it.
The house you were in was the last one who was killed. This house belongs to the first, and I imagine that there have been a lot of people in and out since.
I sat down and stared up into his face. He cared about this one.
She was a friend,
he said slowly as his hand on the door curled into a fist.
Her name was Conora. She had human blood like Tad. Hers was further back, but left her weak.
Tad was his son, half-human, and currently at college. His human blood hadn't, as far as I could see, lessened the affinity for metals he shared with his father. I don't know whether he'd gotten his father's immortality. He was 19, and looked it.
She was our librarian, our keeper of records, and collector of stories. She knew every tale, every power that cold iron and Christianity robbed us of. She hated being weak, hated and despised humans even more. But she was kind to Tad.
Z turned his face so I couldn't see it, and abruptly, angrily, opened the front door. Once again, I entered the house alone. If Z hadn't told me Conora had been a librarian, I might have guessed. Books were stacked everywhere, on shelves, on floors, on chairs and tables. Most of them weren't the kind of books that had been made in the last century. And none of the titles I saw were written in English. As in the last house, the smell of death was present, though, as Z had promised, it was old. The house mostly just smelled musty with a faint chaser of rotten food and cleaning fluids. He hadn't said when she died, but I could guess that there hadn't been anyone here for a month or more. About a month ago, the demon had been causing all sorts of violence by its very presence. I was pretty sure that the Fae had considered that, and was reasonably certain the reservation was far enough away to have escaped that influence. Even so, when I regained my human form, I thought I might ask C about it. Conora's bedroom was soft and feminine in an English cottage way. The floor was pine or some other softwood, covered with scattered hand-woven rugs. Her bedspread was that thin white stuff with knots that I always have associated with bed and breakfasts or grandmothers. Which is odd, since I've never met any of my grandparents or slept in a bed and breakfast. A dead rose in a bud vase was on a small table next to the bed, and there wasn't a book to be found. The second bedroom was her office. When Z said she was collecting stories, I'd somehow expected notebooks and paper, but there was only a small bookcase with an unopened package of burnable discs. The rest of the shelves were empty. Someone had taken her computer, though they'd left her printer and monitor. Maybe they'd take him whatever had been on the shelves as well. I left the office and continued exploring. The kitchen had been recently scrubbed with ammonia, though there was still something rotting in the fridge. Maybe that was why there was one of those obnoxious air fresheners on the counter. I sneezed and backed out. I wasn't going to get any sense from that room. All that trying would do was deaden my nose with the air freshener. I toured the rest of the house, and by process of elimination deduced that she died in the kitchen. Since the kitchen had a door and a pair of windows, the killer could certainly have entered and left without leaving scent anywhere else. I made a mental note of that, but made a second round of the house anyway. I caught Z's scent, and more faintly, Tad's as well. There were three or four people who had visited here often, and a few who were less frequent visitors. If this house held secrets like the last one, I wasn't able to trigger them. When I came out of the front door, the last of the daylight was nearly gone. Z waited on the porch with his eyes closed, his face turned slightly to the last fading light. I had to yip to get his attention.
"Finished?"
he asked in a voice that was a little darker, a little more other than usual.
"Since Connors was the first murder, why don't we hit the murder scenes in order from here on out?"
he suggested. The scene of the second murder didn't smell of death at all. If someone had died here, it had been so well cleaned that I couldn't smell it. Or the Fae who had lived here was so far from humanity that his death didn't leave any of the familiar scent markers. There were, however, a number of visitors shared between this house and the first two, and a few I'd found only in the first and third house. I kept them on the suspect list, because I hadn't been able to get a good scent in Connor of the librarian's kitchen. Also, since this house was so clean, I couldn't entirely eliminate anyone who had been only in the first house. It would be handy to be able to keep track of where I'd scented whom, but I'd never figured out any way to record a scent with pen and paper. I'd just have to do the best I could. The fourth house Z took me to looked no more remarkable than any of the others had appeared. A beige house, trimmed unimaginatively in white, with nothing but dead and dying grass in the yard.
"This one hasn't been cleaned," he said sourly as he opened the door. "Once we had a third victim, the focus of effort changed from concealing the crime from the humans to figuring out who the murderer is."
He wasn't kidding when he said it hadn't been cleaned. I hopped over old newspapers and scattered clothing that had been left lying in the entryway. This Fae had not been killed in the living room or kitchen, or in the master bedroom, where a family of mice had taken up residence. They scurried away as I stepped inside. The master bathroom, for no reason I could see, smelled like the ocean rather than mouse like the rest of this corner of the house. Impulsively, I closed my eyes as I had in the first house and concentrated on what my other senses had to tell me. I heard it first, the sound of surf and wind. Then a chill breeze stirred my fur. I took two steps forward, and the cool tile softened into sand. When I opened my eyes, I stood at the top of a sandy dune at the edge of a sea. Sand blew in the wind, stinging my nose and eyes and catching in my fur as I stared dumbfounded at the water, while my skin hummed with the magic of the place. It was sunset here, too, and the light turned the sea a thousand shades of orange, red, and pink. I slipped down through the sharp-edged salt grass until I stood on the hard-packed beach. Still, I could see no end of the water whose waves swelled and gentled to wash up on shore. I watched the waves for long enough to allow the tide to come in and touch my toes. The icy water reminded me that I was here to work, and as beautiful and impossible as this was, I was unlikely to find the murderer here. I could smell nothing but sea and sand. I turned to leave the way I'd come before true night fell, but behind me all I could see were endless sand dunes with gentle hills rising behind them. Either the wind and the sand had erased my paw prints while I'd been watching, or else they had never been there at all. I couldn't even be sure which hill I'd come down. I froze where I stood, somehow convinced that if I moved so much as a step from where I was, I'd never find my way back. The peaceful spell of the ocean was entirely dispelled, and the landscape, still beautiful, held shadows and menace. Slowly I sat down, shivering in the breeze. All I could do was hope that Z found me, or that this landscape would fade away as quickly as it had come. To that end, I lowered myself until my belly was on the sand, with the ocean to my back. I put my chin on my paws, closed my eyes, and thought, bathroom, and how it ought to smell of mouse, trying to ignore the salt sea and the wind that ruffled my fur. But it didn't go away.
"Well, now," said a male voice, "what have we here? I've never heard of a coyote blundering underhill."
I opened my eyes and spun around, crouching in preparation to run or attack as seemed appropriate. About 10 feet away, between me and the ocean, a man watched me. At least he looked mostly like a man. His voice had sounded so normal, sort of Harvard professorial, that it took me a moment to realize just how far from normal this man was. His eyes were greener than the Lincoln green that Uncle Mike had his waitstaff wear, so green that not even the growing gloom of night dimmed their color. Long pale hair, damp with salt water and tangled with bits of sea plants, reached the back of his knees. He was stark naked, and comfortable with it. I could see no weapons. There was no aggression in his posture or voice, but my instincts were screaming. I lowered my head, keeping eye contact, and managed not to growl. Staying in coyote form seemed the safest thing. He might think me simply a coyote, who had wandered into the bathroom of a dead fae and from there to wherever here was. Not likely, I had to admit. Maybe there were other paths to get here. I'd seen no hint of another living thing, but maybe he'd believe I was exactly what I looked like. We stared at each other for a long time, neither of us moving. His skin was several shades paler than his hair. I could see the bluish cast of veins just below his skin. His nostrils fluttered as he drew in my scent, but I knew I smelled like a coyote. Why hadn't Z used him? Obviously this fae used his nose, and he didn't seem powerless to me. Maybe it was because they thought he might be the murderer. I shuffled through folklore as he watched me, trying to think of all the human-seeming fae who dwelt in or about the sea. There were a lot of them, but only a few I knew much about. Selkies were the only ones I could remember that were even neutral. I didn't think he was a Selkie, mostly because I couldn't be that lucky, and he didn't smell like something that would turn into a mammal. He smelled cold and fish-like. There were kinder things in lakes and lochs, but the sea spawns mostly horror stories, not gentle brownies who keep houses clean.
"You smell like a coyote," he said finally. "You look like a coyote, but no coyote ever wandered underhill to the Sea King's realm. What are you?" "Gnädiger Herr," said Z cautiously from somewhere just behind me, "this one is working for us and got lost."
Sometimes I loved that old man as much as I loved anyone, but I'd never been so happy to hear his voice. The sea fae didn't move, except to raise his eyes until I was pretty sure he was looking Z in the face. I didn't want to look away, but I took a step back until my hip hit Z's leg to reassure myself that he wasn't just a figment of my imagination.
"She is not fae," said the fae. "Neither is she human."
There was something in Z's voice that was awfully close to deference, and I knew I'd been right to be afraid. The stranger abruptly strode forward and dropped to one knee in front of me. He grabbed my muzzle without so much as a by your leave and ran his free hand over my eyes and ears. His icy hands weren't ungentle, but even so, without Z's nudge, I might have objected. He dropped my head abruptly and stood again.
"She wears no elf salve, nor does she stink of the drugs that occasionally drop a lost one here to wander and die. Last I knew, rare though it is, your magic was not such as could do this. So how did she get here?"
As he spoke, I realized that it wasn't Harvard I heard in his voice, but merry old England.
I don't know, mein Herr. I suspect that she doesn't know either. You, of all people, know that the Underhill is fickle and lonely. If my friend broke the glamour that hides the entrances, it would never keep her out.
The sea creature grew very still, and the waves of the ocean subsided like a cat gathering itself to pounce. The wisps of clouds in the sky darkened.
And how, he said very quietly, would she break our glamour? I brought her to help us discover a murderer, because she has a very good nose, Z said. If glamour has a weakness, it is scent. Once she broke that part of the illusion, the rest followed. She is not powerful or a threat.
The ocean struck without warning. A giant wave slapped me, robbing me of my footing and my sight. In one bare instant, it stole the heat of my body, so I don't think I could have breathed, even if my nose wasn't buried in water. A strong hand grabbed my tail and yanked hard. It hurt, but I didn't protest, because the water was retreating, and without that grip, it would have carried me out with it. As soon as the water had subsided to my knees, Z released his hold. Like me, he was drenched, though he wasn't shivering. I coughed to get out the salt water I'd swallowed, shook my fur off, then looked around, but the sea fae was gone. Z touched my back.
I'll have to carry you to take you back.
He didn't wait for a response, just picked me up. There was a nauseating moment when all my senses swam around me, and then he set me down on the tile of the bathroom floor. The room was dark as pitch. Z turned on the light, which looked yellow and artificial after the colors of the sunset.
Can you continue?
He asked me. I looked at him, but he gave his head a sharp shake. He didn't want to talk about what happened. It irked me, but I'd read enough fairy tales to know that sometimes talking about the Fae too directly lets them listen in. When I got him out of the reservation, I would get answers if I had to sit on him. Until then, I put my curiosity aside to consider his question. I sneezed twice to clear my nose, and then put it down on the floor to collect more people from this house. This time Z came with me, staying back so as not to interfere, but close on my heels. He didn't say anything more, and I ignored him as I struggled for an explanation of what had just happened to me. Was this house real? Z told the other Fae that I had broken the glamour. Wouldn't that mean that it was the other landscape that was real? But that would mean that there was an entire ocean here, which seemed really unlikely, though I could still smell it if I tried. I knew that Underhill was the fairy realm, but the stories about it were pretty vague, where they weren't outright contradictory. The sun had truly set, and Z turned on lights as we went. Though I could see fine in the dark, I was grateful for the light. My heart was still certain that we were going to be eaten, and it pounded away at twice its usual speed. Death's unlovely perfume drew my attention to a closed door. If I'd been on my own, I could have opened the door easily enough, but I believe in making use of others. I whined. Coyotes can't bark, not like a dog. And Z obediently opened the door and revealed the stairs going down into a basement. It was the first of the houses that had had a basement, unless they'd been hidden somehow. I bounded down the stairs. Z turned on the lights and followed me down. Most of the basement looked like basements look. Junk stored without rhyme or reason, unfinished walls and cement floor. I padded across the floor, following Death to a door, shut tight. Z opened that one without me asking, and I found, at last, the place where the Fae who had lived here was murdered. Unlike the rest of the house, this room had been immaculate before the resident had been murdered. Underneath the rust-colored stains of the Fae's blood, the tile floor gleamed. Cracked, leather-bound tomes with the authentic lumpiness of pre-printing press books sat intermingled with battered paperbacks and college math and biology texts in bookcases that lined the walls. This room was the bloodiest I'd seen so far, and given the first murder, that was saying something. Even dried and old, the blood was overwhelming. It had pooled, stained, and sprayed as the Fey had fought with his attacker. The lower shelves of three bookcases were dotted with it. Tables had been knocked